Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. This episode of The Media Twits is brought to you by CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, offering an intensive, cutting-edge, three-semester Master of Arts in Journalism and a unique one-semester advanced certificate in entrepreneurial journalism, and CUNY JCamp, a series of continuing professional development workshops focused on emerging trends and skill sets in the industry. Learn more at journalism.cuny.edu. Welcome back, Rafat Ali, who was gone in India and now back from his brief vacation. How are things going?
Good, thank you. Yes, and thanks for... thanks for asking. Thanks for getting a stand-in. I know Stacey Kramer, who was my co-editor back at Big Content, she was standing in for me. And yeah, it was a very short, I mean, for India, if you go that far, you better go for a long time. It was a relatively short one-week trip for me. It's for family stuff. And it was a very enjoyable, fulfilling 1 week. So, and I have, as you probably know, I've developed this increasing sort of love for photography, and I did a lot of that. So,
yeah, I saw some of your photos up on Facebook. They looked really good.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, no, I'm increasingly enjoying. I bought this new camera that just came out, Olympus Pen EP3 series. Olympus Pen series has EP1, EPL1, EP2, EPL3. And so they just came out. It hasn't even launched in US. I have bought it on eBay from Hong Kong. It's the Olympus Pen EP3.
Wow, you're hardcore. So this is a digital SLR?
No. So I'm not hardcore. This was my first step up from point and shoots.
Okay, and so you're leaving the Leica Panasonic.
I was using I was using Panasonic when we first talked, and I used the I've been using the Canon S95, which is I think a very good point and shoot over the last 6-8 months, and now I'm moving to not DSLR but intermediate Micro Four Thirds, which is a relatively new category. Between point and shoots and DSLRs.
That's kind of not quite as big. And does it have interchangeable lenses?
It does have interchangeable lenses, not as many, but they have special interchangeable lenses. I mean, like, and you can use the regular ones by using, I think they have a converter or whatever it's called that you use, and you can use your regular lenses in it, but the body is smaller and the lenses are smaller as well.
Okay.
But it has like automatic functionalities and filters and all this stuff, so it's intermediate step in between. It was end of Ramadan, so it was all family and all my childhood friends and stuff had come back, so I was more focused on family.
That sounds fun, and I guess a lot of good food too.
It was tons of great food, and one of the things you learn about photography is that shyness is not an option. So, like, from taking pictures of people or food, even if other people are snickering at what I'm doing, I just do it.
Right.
So, and that's just, I'm sure that's true for every photographer.
For sure. Well, we have a lot that's been going on while you were gone. Of course, there's been a crazy week. Maybe you kept up with some of the things that are going on. Maybe you haven't.
I have. But... yeah, it's crazy. I mean, how can I not?
And like you said earlier, you don't even want to look at Twitter now because you're afraid of another story coming along that you'll have to actually pay attention to now.
Yeah.
Or get obsessed with. I mean, these are the kind of stories that we easily get obsessed with. Here are all the stories that we're going to talk about. Yahoo fired its CEO, Carol Bartz. And there's a question as to who will be kind of Tim Morse as the interim CEO, but no one knows exactly what's going to happen as far as who's going to be at the top and maybe even who's going to own the company. And similar things happening at AOL, where Michael Arrington and TechCrunch, Arrington had announced a new crunch fund, VC fund. There were some problems with conflicts of interest, and then the question was whether he should remain as editor of TechCrunch or not because of that conflict, and whether he's fired or not, and what the future of TechCrunch is, and then even the question of Tim Armstrong, CEO of AOL, is he now in trouble as well? So that's another saga that's been ongoing this week. And then just today, Google announced that it was buying Zagat, the reviews books, to use probably in its local places pages. So all of them very interesting stories. Now we'll turn to Kara Swisher, our special guest, who is the co-executive editor of All Things D, co-producer and co-host of the D Conference, which is now prepping for its 10th year in 2012. The first thing we'll talk about is Carol Bartz now being fired at Yahoo in a very colorful way, and had this reaction and interview with Fortune. What do you think about the timing of this move?
Well, it's a little bit odd. I mean, why now as opposed to last month or a month before or even 6 months ago? I mean, that's the issue. I think things had ultimately reached a head with her. She wasn't, I think, being very cooperative. There were some big deals happening at the time that she wasn't as involved with as she needed to be, I guess. And I guess the performance just wasn't there. And so, this board is notoriously lackluster, and therefore they took forever to do something that everyone, every investor in America who is in Yahoo understood rather quickly. After she had been there a year. But that's typical of the Yahoo board, which is sort of like stumbled from one disaster to the next over the last few years.
And now you've got people basically saying that the Yahoo board should be replaced. You have one kind of very vocal investor.
Yes.
And do you think that's possible? How do you replace your entire board if the board's the one's in charge?
Well, it's easy. I mean, there's one of the 5% owners, a very aggressive hedge fund manager named Daniel Loeb, has just filed a 13D asking for the entire board to be replaced, which is a very serious thing. This guy doesn't fool around. He's a very serious activist shareholder. Before they were dealing with Carl Icahn in a very similar situation. I mean, you could do a lot of things. You could just you could have the shareholders decide to replace the board. That could happen. It never does, but it certainly could happen. Or some other party will come in and buy a large stake of the company and then just replace the board with a new board. I think that's the hope of some of these investors, because that's probably the easiest thing here. But it would require a big, slug of cash from a private equity firm or an outside company, and that has its own complexities involved in it. It's a very difficult situation to be in, and so they've hired these investment bankers to figure it out, which is another, investment bankers figuring out the innovation at an internet company is a difficult situation to be in.
Yeah. What do you think about this idea that Jerry Yang might try to get together enough investors to buy it back himself?
Well, I don't think that's. I think it's not very much like Jerry. I think he wants to play the inside game. So I wrote a story today saying he's certainly back. It's just a question of what back means. I mean, taking it private is kind of an interesting and intriguing idea, but it's a lot of money. At least $25 billion. If you want to take it out, I think it's worth 17 now, and you need somewhat of a premium. So it could. It's a very high figure for even large private equity firms.
Kara Strafford. So the question, my question would be, what do you think would happen with sooner? Would they find a new CEO, or would some sort of transaction or some sort of strategic thing happen before that?
I don't think they know. I mean, finding a CEO is also problematic, because if you're a CEO, wouldn't you want to be part of the strategic look at the company? I mean, you don't want to bring in a CEO afterwards. And so they either have to get a CEO in now to be part of this, which is difficult because it's a difficult job, and it has to be a good CEO this time. This has been like the ninth bad CEO of Yahoo, like not bad, but just problematic CEO of Yahoo. And so that happens, or else they just do the strategic review and find a new investor to replace the board and bring in their own CEO and decide what to do with it. So, all around, it's sort of a hairball, no matter which way you turn.
I mean, in either case, they're without leadership for a while.
Yeah. But she was a leader. She was a bad leader, but she certainly definitely ran the place. It's just a question of whether they have the right leader. You know what I mean? They've certainly had Mr. and Mrs. Right now, but not Mr. and Mrs. Right.
What do you think about this idea that they might buy Hulu and then have Jason Kilar as the CEO?
You know, we've written that too. I mean, you know, maybe I don't think Hulu wants to sell itself to Yahoo. I think they have better, more less complicated offers from Amazon and Google, which are much, you know, are very clean and it's a sale. And so I don't know why they would pull themselves into this situation. And you know, Jason Kilar's not running that process, and there's definitely tensions between him and the owners of Hulu. So it's not like he's in the driver's seat there necessarily. He's part of that, but you know, I don't think they're going to do a deal just so Jason can have a job. And Jason can just have that job anyway without Hulu.
So let's talk about what's going on at AOL and TechCrunch. This is fascinating.
They're both at the same time, this sort of disastrous collapse of whatever.
Yeah, I think so too, because you think about, I mean, Yahoo and AOL to have this, I mean, what feels like a real crisis at the top, because a lot of this might has to do with Tim Armstrong and what's going on with Arianna Huffington, right?
Yeah, it's a very serious problem for Tim Armstrong. I mean, you know, Michael Arrington is what he is. He's like, you know, he's like essentially playing the role of the sort of firebomber or terrorist here, and which is what he does. He's a, you know, he's a troublemaker, so he's doing what he always does. And you know, the problem is this is a public company, and you can't play these games at a public company. You know, it's not, this is not acceptable to shareholders. And so Tim Armstrong's in a very difficult position at this moment, because of the situation, and he doesn't have a lot of leverage, really. I mean, he doesn't want to sell TechCrunch because they've already touted it as doing so well, and at the same time, he can't have an employee threaten him to get a piece of a unit out of the company. I mean, the whole thing is just a disaster, and it's impacting his reputation, which is already dicey on other issues of not being able to get the ads up, not being able to grow the company properly. So you know, he's really gotten himself in a situation, and you know, you can say what you will about Arrington, but you know, his interest probably, except for the fact that he wants his payout probably, which is millions of dollars. He's in a situation to really destroy this property, you know, sort of destroy the village to save the country, I guess. I don't know. Or destroy the country to save the village. Whatever. It's a bad situation all around.
How does AOL get its money out of that? They were putting, what, $10 million into the Crunch Fund. Are they able to get that out?
Well, can they renege at this point? I doubt it. They probably got a contract with not just Arrington, but his partner. So, you know, there could be lawsuits up flying. And you know Arrington loves lawsuits. He loves to wage the lawsuits. He's a lawyer himself, and he's not scared of them. I would never want to be in a lawsuit, but he doesn't mind it because he does it sort of like breathing. So, you know, it was Juju with Calcanis. Like, it's just like everybody he's in a lawsuit with or a fight or something like that. So, you know, this could really be complicated if AOL pulls out of the Crunch Fund. Should it be called the Crunch Fund? I mean, that's another issue. You know, one of the key moments, I think, of this, it was a quote that I got from Reid Hoffman where he just admitted what it was happening, which was a corrupt situation of this website giving deal flow to a venture capitalist, which is what it was all about from the beginning. But even though they protest us that they're such a high-level media organization.
What does it mean being in the deal flow? Is that basically saying that TechCrunch would have kind of inside information about startups that no one else had?
Yeah. They'd know about them. They'd know, no, not inside, but they'd know about them. They'd know about them. You know, it's really important for venture capitalists to know where the deals are before everybody else knows. It's like information. You're buying it. Like, you know, there's these experts networks that are all around the place that give people, that's the same thing. So this gives you a little bit of an edge. You know, it's like, frankly, you know, it's like juicing, whatever. It gives you an edge, you know, in the competition against other venture capitalists. And that's not, you know, like, I don't begrudge venture capitalists wanting to get an edge, but you know, they were trying to use this person and to get it, and the thing that's powerful about him is this platform that he's built, which, you know, again, I'm not a fan of his, but boy, is that some platform. You know, and it's very powerful, and they wanted a piece of it, you know, and a piece of it means deal flow. And I think, you know, they could say that wasn't the case, but every single venture capitalist I talked to thought that was the case, and Reid just said it out loud and in public.
So, what does this do for the relationship between Arianna and Tim, which seems to be sort of more material to AOL? I mean, they pay 10 times more for that.
Yeah. Well, not good. Not good. I mean, both of them had told me they're getting along fine, but I can't imagine, you know, who knows who's, I don't mean to say they're disingenuous, but everybody has a different story. And I think it's because they think of it, everyone has their own reality distortion field here that's going on. And they're very, sorry about that, they're very much at cross purposes with each other. In terms of what they're saying, and that's why you're getting so many different stories out of AOL. I don't think they're lying by any stretch of the imagination. I just think they have different stories. They believe different things. Who knows with that relationship? But that's, you know, they've got to settle this one. Next week, there's a very big conference that I'm sure makes a lot of money for TechCrunch. This TechCrunch Disrupt. What if he doesn't show up? Who's going to run it? What if his staff leaves? Who's going to run it? I mean, this is real money.
Yeah, and I guess now Paul Carr has said that he's going to quit if Arrington doesn't have a say in who gets chosen as the successor and all.
Oh, for crap's sake. You know, I'm sorry. If we did this at the Wall Street Journal or anywhere else, Rupert Murdoch would justifiably fire us. And you know, whatever, I guess. You know, whatever. The AOL owns this property, and if they don't want to work there, they should quit. You know, this is not it's not like this is Woodward and Bernstein here crusading for journalism. This is just ridiculous that they hide under the guise of journalism. And, you know, some of them there are journalists, and they're very good journalists, but this is insane. Like, I'm going to defend the editor who's now starting a venture fund about the people he covers. Oh, that's why Thomas, you know, that's why everybody died for the First Amendment. Like, please, come on. You know, Thomas Jefferson would be vomiting at this point. So, whatever. I mean, they can say all they want and get on their high horses, but what they're defending is just appalling. I mean, I don't know. What do I really think?
We know what you think. So what's the new development today that you know?
Arrington wrote a screed saying, you know, either editorial independence, like he wouldn't know editorial if it hit him in the head. Crying that he's so, you know, he's a victim, you know, persecuted victim of whatever. I mean, I've met persecuted victims and he's not one of them. He wants to buy it back and he's threatened them essentially. And you can't threaten a public company CEO and not expect to be fired. So the process is they're not going to sell it to him. And they're in severance negotiations, and what they have over his head is the money going into the crunch fund, which they can withhold, I suppose. And I don't know if they get sued, but they certainly have the option to withhold it, I guess. And they have the money that they owe that is part of the payout for a deal that he was supposed to be there. So they've got some financial incentives for him to settle and do normal people. This would be just severance negotiations, you know what I mean? But because of the tense nature of this group of people. It has to become like a three-ring circus. So he's in severance negotiations, which could end up in a series of lawsuits if they don't get settled. And, you know, if I wanted to, you know, take a stop in the world he happens to occupy, the only thing that's keeping him from going sort of postal on AOL is the money, I guess. And I don't think this guy is motivated by money, so... it'll be interesting to see what he does. It's in his interests to wreck TechCrunch at this point if they're not going to sell it to him and start his own thing. And you know he will do that. He seems like a person who would just, even if he had a non-compete, he would just ignore it and hope and assume someone will sue him. And again, it's a person who doesn't care if they're sued. So it's just a disaster. I don't know. I mean, whatever. Like, it's fascinating. I can't imagine going round and round with Rupert Murdoch on this issue, us at All Things D, and I don't think we would. But we also wouldn't start a venture fund, so there you have it.
Do you think that he could, as you said, he could just leave and start a new, whatever it be called, site, and all the people with him, and it would still be as, I mean, it'll still be as good as in whatever you would consider TechCrunch to be?
Well, I don't know. I don't consider TechCrunch to be good all the time, but it's very good. You know, I mean, yes, he certainly could. Why not? Why can't he just, you know, he's got a nice formula. He's got a secret sauce of whatever he's peddling. And the question is, can he recreate the magic? That's often very difficult. I mean, lots of people have tried that, come back for their second act and repeated a lot of what made them a success in the first place. But, you know, you don't count someone out that has such aggression and entrepreneurialism, aggressive entrepreneurialism or entrepreneurial aggression, whatever you want to call it. you know, here's someone who does know how to attract attention and get people and have and has an interesting insight into a lot of things. So maybe he could and take the whole group. But, you know, you can't do that these days with, you know, you just can't do it anytime without expecting to be sued. But, well, you know, I don't, who knows? I don't know if AOL will sue them. The problem is Tim Armstrong's the one in trouble here, not Harrington, because I think he could start, you know, he could just do, you know, open a blog post and everybody would read it because he has an interesting insight. It's a question if he has the same amount of power that he had at TechCrunch, as a TechCrunch site.
Right, and what would happen, I mean, the whole point is he wants to be able to have his TechCrunch and his Crunch Fund. And so what he's going to try to do is create whatever, right, so he's going to want to create, when he says editorial independence, that means I want to have my own site where I run it, just like I ran TechCrunch, and I also want to have this fund. So that's really what he's what he's aiming to do.
No, of course, no one sell, but he shouldn't have sold it then. Like, why'd he sell it? It's sort of like someone who sells a house to someone and then they put on a deck that they don't like, going over and like wrecking the deck. It's like if you sell a house and someone changes it, guess what, my friend? It's not your house anymore. But, you know, he feels like he got some promises from Tim Armstrong, which seem insane that anybody would promise to let you do any crazy thing you want. But if he has proof that Tim Armstrong was going to let him do this, then he should sue him. I don't know. I'm not privy to those documents, but they certainly are in the middle of these horrible negotiations, which I'm that have to end well. There's no good ending here for AOL. There's no. They bought something from someone who the relationship is soured, and it's someone not afraid to fight them. And for better or worse, it's a divorce. It's an ugly divorce. It's like War of the Roses, I guess.
Yeah, and that comment by Tim
Armstrong. That was a good movie.
It was. That comment by Tim Armstrong, you know, they have different standards. What were you
You know, I have spoken to him about that. He said it was part of a longer interview and that it was taken out of context, which everybody says. You know, that's the excuse of everybody.
Right.
But I suspect he didn't mean, I think he was referring, he says he was referring to Arrington himself and not all of TechCrunch. But because, as Arrington made the quote, TechCrunch is me and I am TechCrunch. You know, I think it's correct to say that. You know what I mean? They do have different standards because he has different standards and he is TechCrunch, as he has said, and nobody denies that. And so, you know, it's just an ugly, ugly divorce going on here. And, you know, maybe they'll like shake their hands and pose for the pictures, but it's ugly. And hopefully they'll settle. Hopefully they'll settle for the people that work there and the people that happen to like TechCrunch and who want to go to the conference and use their products and stuff like that. If they don't, you know, the War of the Roses ended. They fell off the chandelier and died. I mean, it was a comedy, but it wasn't very.
And that could be the ending here. And Tim Armstrong, I mean, he is a question like that he just doesn't understand. Like, he wanted to build kind of a journalism empire with Patch and with everything, and yet does he really understand the way journalism works? I mean, that he would set up this, he must have been involved in putting all the money into Crunch Fund, and he did understand.
Right, no, sure.
He set this up to give Arrington a different standard. So to him, he didn't see any issues with this until Huffington, you and other people kind of brought up the problems with it.
Yeah. Well, he didn't do that. You know, let's not call what's going on there journalism. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm this old-fashioned lady who believes in ethics and standards and reporting and fairness and accuracy. This isn't journalism. It's new. You can call it new journalism, you know, whatever that kooky TechCrunch writer going on about how much different they were. You know, we operate the same way TechCrunch does. We're fast. We break news. We're in the new blogging empire. We use these newfangled things like iPhones. You know, it's just ridiculous. They want to have their cake and eat it, too. They want to be able to make what are clearly conflicts of interest okay, because we should just trust them. And okay, maybe some people do trust them, but that much of a financial incentive just creates a myriad of problems. And no matter how you slice it, it's just, you know, it's sort of like that expression. I don't know, you know, just when they talked about that Supreme Court justice when he was doing that pornography thing. I can't define it, but I know what it is when I see it. And I know what this is, and everybody else does. And so, you know, maybe we're all old-fashioned, old, you know, cronies not to understand that this is the new way. But as far as I'm concerned, this is the same thing. You know, this is why we have the mortgage crisis. This is just crap. It's like it's shortcut taking. It's convenient and changing your rules based on what benefits you financially. It's very clear what's going on here. Now, he can do that, and all power to him if that's what he wants to do, but he's not going to be able to do it with an AOL at this point, and that's the problem. So he either has to get out and start his own thing, and that has its own set of problems, or he has to stay and live in the world he sold to. And let's just remember, he sold the company. Do you know what I mean? Like, sold it. I mean, I don't know what's getting lost here, but I think he got a check. So
and
whatever.
That was, you don't think that, and do you think his payout wasn't contingent on being there 3 years? Like that's part. That must be part of their negotiations now, right? Like, you know, the fact that he was supposed to be there 3 years.
No, yeah, but he's gone. He's gone. I mean, I think the Fortune story wasn't quite. He wasn't quite gone when that story was written last night. But you cannot write a threatening email to a CEO of a public company and expect to stay at that company. It just doesn't happen. I have never seen a company where it happens. And for Tim Armstrong's sake, he really can't put up with that. I mean, it's forget it. He can't have someone who works for him and several levels below him. I think he maybe reports to Tim Armstrong. That might not be true. You know, he can't have someone threaten him. He can't. You know, if I threaten, Rupert Murdoch, he should fire me. It's his company. Kind of thing, and it's a public company. It just doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. He can't stay. So the question is the terms of leaving, and we'll see what happens, how that works out. But you know, so far they've all behaved like, you know, I would say 6-year-olds. My 6-year-old is incredibly well behaved in comparison. So I would put my in the room for that behavior. And this morning my 6-year-old was being a pain in the neck, and he stopped right away.
So. All right. Well, we'll let you get back to all the crazy stories that are breaking now. It's been a wild week. So
it's fantastic. What are you talking about? And you don't ask about Carol Bartz's wacky situation. I mean, that was fantastic. That was the most fantastic interview I've ever seen.
Like, the one really, that she did with Fortune.
Oh, fantastic! I gotta love it. I gotta tell you, that was. And we're doing great, by the way. This thing is great for us. I gotta tell you, everything is fans. Keep going crazy, TechCrunch. Love it, love it. Thank you so much, and thank you, Carol Bartz. And you know, if you want to crack up Rafat at any time, please let me know.
No, we'll be on it. I'm so happy that I'm not.
No, we
part
got
of this whole game.
You know, we got HP. We forgot HP. I mean, it just goes on and on. It's like crazy. It's like there must be crazy in the water here in Silicon Valley or something.
All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem.
Yeah,
have
a
great day.
Take care, Kara. Right.
Bye.
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 So everything else kind of pales in comparison, but we can still talk a little bit about. So Google is buying the Zagat Review Books, which is kind of another one of those moments where we think about Google and think, you know, okay, they're not going to be an original content company. They're not going to, they're not going to go into hardware, and yet then they buy Motorola and now they buy Zagat. It seems kind of a little head scratching. I mean, it makes sense. They're trying to go into, getting local reviews of restaurants and all that and try to take on Yelp, but it does seem like they're kind of leaving their core competency in a way.
Yeah, but I think that I did see a bunch of discussion about Google Content Company today when I saw that news. But I think that debate was settled 2-3 years ago, even more early than that when they bought YouTube, and especially as they've tried to get movies and other content onto YouTube and others.
But YouTube is a platform, though. I mean, it doesn't have reviewers and books and things and people. It's not, you know, there's no editorial process on YouTube as well. There is. There's some things that are chosen. It's true.
Yeah, and they also, I mean, they came out with the whole movie. There was that Day in the Life of that's just coming out, and I don't know if it's already been released, but that YouTube movie that's just come out.
Right.
I mean, that's a whole movie that's been released in theaters. So you can't say Google is not in has finding content because they bought Zagat,
I always pronounce it wrong. It's Zagat.
I know. It's Zagat. it's a bunch of tweets about that too online, making fun of it.
They can make fun of me. I always get it wrong.
Yeah, no, but I think that one thing to be kept in mind here is that Google did try to buy Yelp. Was it early last year or something, for a ridiculously large amount before Yelp took funding from
That's
Elevation.
Right. That's right. I think it was $500 million.
Or something like that. And then Yelp took money from Elevation, which is the company, which is the firm that invested in Palm and other.
That's Bono's. Bono's part of that.
Yeah, other big disasters that they invested in. So So this is clearly, yeah, I think it does fit in. I think what you will probably see is that the print books, which are a large part of Zagat's business right now, will probably probably go down. Will be on a decline curve, but it'll be sort of a managed decline curve. And then I think the ratings and stuff will be integrated within within Google, all kinds of stuff, Google Maps, Google Search, and other Google Local, and everything else that they have. And Google will then leverage the relationships that Zagat has with the local merchants and restaurants and all that kind of stuff. So, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the website, which is a premium website. I think they're indicating that they will keep the premium service going on, but I doubt that will happen long term.
And what I mean, how do you see it as someone who, I mean, you're now kind of a travel site entrepreneur. You're trying to start up something within the travel realm. You know, Zagat is a little bit into that. Yelp. I mean, these services are things that people use a lot when they're traveling. Do you think Google, you know, could they kind of make inroads to? I don't know if they would threaten what you're trying to start, or just, you know, is it someone you have? How do you look at them as an entrepreneur?
I think I think they're trying everything at this point. I mean, the fact that they bought Motorola and doing tons of other stuff. I think they're and Google Plus and I think as an entrepreneur, I look at the fact that they're trying to spread their tentacles in every way that they can. I think Larry Page, since he's taken over, has publicly said he's going to try and make big bets, and I don't think you can fault. They surely have been making big bets with these buys, so and now they are very serious about Hulu. It seems like which when the Hulu process began, nobody thought they would be serious because of antitrust issues with YouTube and online video, but clearly they seem to be serious from all the stories that are coming out.
Yeah, and that's interesting, the whole Hulu thing with Google about how they made this offer that was, you know, supposedly bigger, much bigger than the other offers, but they're kind of asking for a longer term to have licensing content from all the TV shows and all the content that's on there. And I guess that's what they're, so it's almost like this just much bigger offer, but they're kind of demanding better licensing fees or better licensing term, I guess a longer term.
Yeah, it remains to be seen. I have doubts that TV studios would do that. But if Google dangles another couple of billion to the studios, I don't know. I'm sure they will listen.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift, along with my co-host Rafat Ali and our special guest Kara Swisher. I want to thank our sponsor, the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, as well as PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Be sure to follow all the news, events, and polls over at PBS MediaShift at pbs.org/MediaShift and our sister site, IdeaLab, at pbs.org/IdeaLab. We'll catch you next week.